From Austin, Texas, this is The Jeff Ward Show.
I'm Jeff Ward, and the only agenda here is to make you think. Stephen Toland is a law partner with the law firm Peek and Toland, and he is the unofficial legal analyst for this show. So here we go. We have the families of those killed in Uvalde in the school shooting now suing pretty much anybody and everybody. And you can answer this, Stephen, whether this has legs, where does it go? I mean, it's one thing to point out. I think we all could probably find plenty of negligence and incompetence that led to the school shooting or that allowed the shooter to get in, and then the argument about the cops not going in trying to stop him. There's plenty there. The bigger question is, it's been announced now, the families of victims of the Uvalde mass shooting are filing a sweeping $27 billion class action lawsuit against multiple law enforcement agencies, the school district, and the manufacturer of the gun used in the attack. Where does this go?
Well, good morning, Jeff. I think it goes, I think it'll settle, obviously, but I do think if you read sort of some of the press releases by this lawyer, Charles Bonner, he also represents victims in the grocery store mass shooting in upstate New York by a white supremacist.
Right.
And so I think this is, he's a civil rights attorney. So he's filing these under what are called 1983 claims. So the idea is to bring about some real change by those and through government. So they have to be acting under color of law, which means they have some duty through the law. So you can sue a school district, school board, because they have some duties or regulations, even though they're not law enforcement, so to speak. So I think this will have some legs. And obviously he says the reason he filed it and wanted $27 billion is because he wanted to make it too expensive, quote unquote, for them to continue to do nothing. And I think that hits on a lot of the themes you've been harping on, Jeff, is that, you know, when a tragedy happens, we're coming up on 90 days now from the shooting, and people don't seem to be doing anything. In the community, it incenses, understandably so, the victims of this tragedy. And so they want action. And so I think that number's designed. That number will never come to fruition. There's too many sovereign immunity caps and governmental caps for that number to even approach anything near that. But the number's designed for shock value. And it's designed to start a national discourse on this. And it's working. It's all over national news.
Okay. Before we get into fault, mm-hmm. $27 billion is a pie in the sky number. Where does it end? I mean, if you had to predict, where does it end up? It's easy for people around the country and people of Texas to go, yeah, right on, get them. But two of the three involved are taxpayer finance. I mean, this comes back to us. So where does it end up?
Well, I think that's a number where I think that number could go considerably down. I think the number that goes way up is like Daniel Defense, the manufacturer of the gun used, for example.
Right.
Or I don't know, what the insurance policy is for Oasis Outback. I don't know if you've ever driven through Uvalde or spent time there. But as you come into town, you know, it's this giant store on the right-hand side that's, I don't know what it's like. It's like a Bass Pro Shops for just a small version of that, something like that. They're going to sue them. They're the shop that sold the shooter the gun. Those are the types of entities, I think, where you could see a higher number. And I think also Department of Public Safety, there's going to be caps on all that. But just trying to pierce that veil a little bit or trying to create that argument is going to be something that's probably important to the plaintiffs and plaintiffs' counsel because, in their opinion, and this is their opinion, that, you know, the governor and our legislature hasn't done enough as far as gun protection and gun rights. And so, you know, I think we're going to see more of these. You know, we can talk about that in a second. I think we're going to see more of these types of lawsuits because we're going to see more of these types of shootings as more people have guns.
What do you mean in that regard, more types? I mean, there have been, okay, I'll go back. We can take the seller of the gun, for example. Go back, unfortunately, we don't have to go back too far. The lunatic shooter who buys, gets out of the Air Force, I mean, is essentially just tossed out, even though he had been a full-on diabolical mess, had cracked a kid's skull, had mutilated animals, had threatened to kill people in a military mental hospital. This guy was a wreck. He gets out. Then he goes to Academy and buys a gun, probably 60 miles from here, and then goes and shoots up a church. But Academy didn't do anything wrong by the letter of the law. Neither the argument for this gun shop in Uvalde is the same, correct?
Right. So, and again, I'm not advocating for any of these things. I'm just explaining why I think this is where we're going. It's a fascinating subject matter in our discourse as a country about the healthy tension between when we want the government to sort of protect us and provide safeguards and measures, and when we want our own autonomy to do that, and when we think the free marketplace will do these things. And so what these lawsuits, I think, are going to be designed to do is, if you're going to say, look, I have the right to go to church or to the mall or to school and not be worried about being killed. And so if one of my loved ones is killed, you know, I'm going to look to try and change that. And so you file these lawsuits, and then what they're trying to do is put the pressure on the manufacturer who has the most money to then say, all you retail sellers who sell our product, I don't care what the state's rules are, we want to enforce stricter rules because we won't be sued anymore. And so I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's how these lawsuits can start to effectuate societal change in ways that people seem to want. And so we'll just see how that goes. But I think that's where this is going to go, is that you're going to see more places and people sued for not keeping their invitees, like if it's a mall or an event, like a music festival, not keeping them safe by not having tighter security. And then they're just going to go up the food chain to sue people.
So use the drug part first. I mean, not the drug part, the gun part first. They're suing the manufacturer of the AR-15, this company has been highly publicized and all that stuff.
Right.
So they're suing the manufacturer of the AR-15 with the big picture argument of, they'll settle, but I'm also sued the local retailer. They'll settle, but it'll be painful enough to convince them to not carry the product. The comparison I would use, and this goes back
to carry the product, but to have tighter regulations and standards than existing governmental regulations require.
Because the shooter bought the gun legally.
Correct.
Yeah.
That seems to be the case. I don't know I'm trying to remember if there's an age issue there or not, but I think he did buy it legally, and I think the argument is the age should be higher, should be that, you know, as he was having, you know, that there was plenty of people maybe that could have provided notice of some of the problems he was having.
Sure.
You know, that's the debate, right? How do we do that? How do we make it safer if we're going to do that? Some people believe we shouldn't do any of that, but if we are going to have those discussions, you know, we need to be realistic about how we can do that and what that would look like. And so the idea of suing a manufacturer is that they have such a control over the lobby and the legislature. And I'm not trying to sound like, woe is me, they have such control. I just mean, they do. They have a lot of force and might. And so the idea is to get all of them together to say, look, why don't you let's get everyone together and create some real rules that make sense so that we don't keep getting sued and we don't keep having these tragedies. That's the goal of somebody filing a lawsuit like this.
Right. I mean, this is looking at the gun as a product. And, right? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Which I think absolutely. Is legitimate, which I think is sort of where the gun argument
product,
does.
Yeah, it's not a product defect case, but yes, it is looking at the product itself.
Yeah, in other words, I want to use a FinFin example, but I don't know if that's the appropriate example. But the same kind of thing has happened, that sooner or later, the retailers are saying, we can't pass these costs along. Our insurance is going up. Our cost of carrying these, am I thinking of this correctly? Is this the big picture strategy? The manufacturer's insurance company says, hey, look, this is getting pretty expensive. So they'll try to pass the costs along to settle lawsuits. But at some point, you're saying the bigger picture argument is the legal system, the civil legal system, will price this thing out of the market.
Right. And I mean, I'm not here, you know, I as a trial lawyer, like I actually believe in what we do for a living and how we can effectuate real change sometimes, although we can be shysters like everyone else in the marketplace, right?
No way. No,
but I mean, some
no,
of these lawsuits, some of these lawsuits can really bring about real change. And that would be, this is where I think you're just going to see more of these as more giant events happen where a rogue gunman does something, you're going to see more and more people try and use a civil lawsuit to bring about legislative change because, in some people's opinion, the legislatures aren't doing enough to stop this type of stuff. So I think that's why I say that.
Okay. But I want to be want people to be clear. The big picture push is that you're going to sue them enough and they'll settle enough that it will drive up their costs enough that it doesn't make the carrying the product worthwhile. That's the marketplace.
Right. And
that's the marketplace concept.
That is the marketplace concept, and that is the only way a lawsuit can bring about change, really, unfortunately. I mean, every now and then you'll get a lawsuit that uncovers something about, and we'll see that more, and we might see that in Camp Lejeune or Roundup, Weed Killer, things like that, when finally, not only is it the cost, but it's the data that's uncovered. It's the research done by lawsuits that are filed and experts that are hired where we uncover, hey, this product is genuinely unsafe, period, full stop. So forget how much money you're losing or not losing. You got to take this product off, and eventually the FDA will come in and say you're right. So we see that more in environmental type stuff or product safety recalls, like we saw that with seatbelts and things like that. So it can have both places work together to bring about change, but generally speaking, it's to price the product out of the market, and then that's what brings about change.
Does any aspect of this lawsuit end up in a court in South Texas, which by itself, for people that don't know, is a big deal?
It is. Are you referring that it's, you know, not that forum shopping is the easiest thing to do anymore, but yeah, if you're...
I am hinting,
days,
and I don't know your business, but I've read that if you want to sue somebody, you want to end up in South Texas, especially if they're big and rich.
Are you saying that Beaumont's full or something? I was going to head over to Orange.
Well, you can try. I think they maxed out over there on cigarette litigation, so I'm not sure where else you want to go.
Yes, how true is that? Yeah, that's a plaintiff's-friendly, generally considered a plaintiff's-friendly venue. I mean, I don't think this is a lawsuit that sees the light of day. I don't. I think it's one that should settle. It should bring everyone together to talk about the real change that's going to take place. And also, I think that part of it is just that there are real caps, without boring the listeners on all the details of that, because it depends on the entity and all those kinds of things. But there are all kinds of caps. In 2005, we had major tort reform here in Texas. And so you're not going to see any crazy number like that for these governmental entities. So I don't think the lawsuit will see the light of day, but I do think threatening to file it and or filing it there would be a big deal and help the plaintiff's cause.
So how does it end up? I mean, there are real arguments to be made that the greatest fault of all, other than the shooter, of course, would be the elementary school that somebody apparently propped the door open, not knowing. There was some fault there. There is the employee who just got fired, finally, some of us would say, who didn't really do much at all. There's the school district employee. So there's the district that you could argue has some fault. Then there is, in my opinion, little argument that at the state level, the county level, of the 400 cops that showed up who didn't do anything, you could point a finger and say, there's some fault there. There's some negligence there. So how did those two end up because you're suing government entities?
The argument you're making, I think, is really sound. That the latter part of it is really important. It's the 70 minutes or so estimated that a lot of these claims are brought by families that did not lose a loved one, but that have suffered extreme emotional distress. And so Texas does allow what's called a bystander intentional infliction of emotional stress or emotional distress claim. And that'll be interesting to see how that, if it does play out in a court of law or in some pretrial filings.
What does that really mean in the context of this? Because no decent human is arguing they've suffered. I mean, even if your kid or your loved one wasn't in there, you've suffered. Anyone outside that school that day that was screaming, go in, has nightmares for the rest of their life.
Yeah, well, it's a little analogous to the, you know, you mentioned the church shooting a second ago. We've talked about that before because that played out in federal court in San Antonio about that, the bystander claims or emotional distress claims that people can suffer from being in there. So in this case, the way that matters is you just have a lot more potential plaintiffs. So when he says Charles Bonner says, we may file a class action suit, there could be quite a few people joining that, because that's part and parcel of the negligence claim of how the law enforcement didn't get in there sooner. You're you're stuck in that space for a lot longer than would otherwise be, I would think, prudent, normal, reasonable, expected, right? And so that exacerbates the claims you would have for emotional distress if you lived through that and saw that, you know. And so that's why I think all that matters. You're gonna have more people potentially joining the suit. So I think it adds a little more gravitas to it.
And the governor and the legislature wants it to go away.
Oh yeah,
I think this is not a good time. It's never a good time, but politically speaking, this is a really bad time for Greg Abbott for this to be hanging out there very long.
Right. So, you know, you've got this race that I don't know who's depends on which side you ask or whatever. Is Beto making any ground or traction or not? How vulnerable could Greg Abbott be when the Republicans have had a stranglehold on the gubernatorial race in Texas for, you know, outside of like Ann Richards and Clemens and White and a few others, right? It's very few Democrats have ever won the governor's seat. But I would think, you know, if I were advising Governor Abbott or his political strategy team, that you would want everything you could, you would put forth all your resources as you could to make this go away as best you could, as quietly as you could. Now, there's all this Operation Lone Star going on, right? Just 60 miles from there, or just if you just go 60 miles past Uvalde, you're going to be in Del Rio, which is like the major hub of where $360 million plus dollars are being spent to enforce what he calls border security and this Operation Lone Star. So I think he's going to shift all his focus on that. But isn't it interesting? And I say interesting, we've got, you know, horrible tragedy, so I don't mean to play on that. I just mean it is interesting that this all of the issues potentially in this political race for governor are all happening in that little 60-mile circle right there in South Texas. So interesting.
Well, you've got a lawyer who, I know nothing about this guy. You said he's representing families of that Buffalo supermarket shooting by that nut job. So this is a person who knows how to get attention, may have a bigger cause than just settling lawsuits, to give lawyers mm-hmm. some credit. So you've got him knowing that an election is hanging out there. Greg Abbott desperately wants this story to go away, and the lawyer wants it to stay in the news. Does he just keep pushing? Is that part of the reason why this $27 billion is $27
billion? Absolutely. Absolutely. And he even said as much for all intent and purpose, that the purpose of having a number that high is because, in his words, something needs to happen. There's been very little accountability. He said in a press conference, "It's what's been done is not even close to what needs to happen." And so I think that's why, right? So he's not going to want this to go away. And this is not a lawsuit. I don't think he files to be rich. I know people, you know, like $27 billion, what are you talking about? Again, with government caps and sovereign immunity and liability being capped at certain numbers, it's not going to, this is not a get-rich lawsuit, trust me.
Where could it end up financially? I mean, you said the caps. I mean, I know we have caps in the state of Texas. I mean, are we really talking 5 million?
We should do another show on that because we'd have to dig into it. It depends on how many plaintiffs join and stuff like that. Because it's going to be very difficult to figure that number out right now. But it's not going to be anywhere close to that number. I mean, it's just not. Now some entities may, like the gun manufacturer and private insurance for Oasis Outback, the shop that sold the weapon to the shooter, that sort of stuff could be different, right? Because that's private. But it's going to be hard to get that number even where close to something that's going to be shocking. So he's going to want to keep it in the news and get guarantees about changes and accountability. And so are these families. I mean, these families have nothing to lose, right? I mean, it's in their community. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting if that puts any pressure on Governor Abbott and how it affects the gubernatorial race. We'll see.
Yeah, because I think a measuring stick is going to be how long this thing lasts. I mean, the incentive maybe by the families and the lawyer is to make this thing last. The incentive by the legislature and the governor is get this off websites as fast as possible.
Right. And it has a lot of traction, a lot of legs nationally. I mean, it's over every national website you can imagine. But and part of it is because he does represent the families in the New York lawsuit, and because he's from San Francisco, and so there's, you know, it's got this coastal connection. I mean, it's kind of like stretches all over the country a little bit. I will say this, Jeff, that we talked about plaintiffs' venues in South Texas. highly unlikely this gets filed in state court now that I think about it, because he has referenced federal class action suits, which I think would be more advantageous for him. And then he's, because these are federal, or I'm sorry, governor actors, in other words, that he's suing, he can take those state claims and move them to federal court and then file a federal lawsuit in addition to that under federal class action rules. And so I think this will end up, if it does see the light, it does see court time, you know, the light of day in court, it'll end up in San Antonio federal court, which is where we were, you know, in front of Javier, you know,
yeah,
whatever, like a couple months ago in the church, you know, Sulphur Springs shooting. So
right.
San Antonio has become quite the hotbed and their federal courts here.
But lately, the entire country watches this because, to your first point, the entire country watches this because this is going after the gun manufacturer, and sooner or later, there's a bloody nose there, right? I mean, to your point, I mean, sooner or later, I mean, I don't know, maybe they can keep passing, I don't know what a gun, one of those guns costs, but they're passing on those costs. Sooner or later, it's not worth it.
Right, and also just, you know, the way the marketplace is, at some point, you think some savvy gun manufacturer would shift the narrative to say, like, you know what, we're actually going to join this. Like, our product's safer, our product's better.
Yeah,
like, you can own our product, and you can hold your head high knowing that we have the toughest standards to purchase it. We have no problem with this number of days waiting period, or we do this type of background. I don't know, some clevy marketer for a gun manufacturer is going to shift that narrative and say, you know, and think that they'll find what we call blue ocean, right? Like fresh marketing material, yep, in that section. And you could see that changing too. And you see that all the time with products, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is where I can nerd out. I'm amazed that hasn't happened, because just the opposite has happened. Because I read up about this. Again, I believe in market forces, and that usually fixes stuff. Yeah. And market forces isn't changing this. In fact, it seems I don't know anything about AR-15s. I don't really care. But the marketing of them seems to be more Rambo-like than it is exactly what you're saying. I've yet to see a marketing effort that says, we're going to differentiate. We're going to go safer. We're going to go mainstream. We're going to go suburban. Instead, I don't know if there's no competition in that industry. I don't know. Something's wrong with that market, because that market is still going Rambo.
Yeah.
When you would think sooner or later, to your point, again, this is not saying government taking your guns. This is just saying the marketplace is going to change sooner or later. They aren't. They're all Rambo all the time. Maybe this changes it.
It does. I guess they just don't feel the need to yet. You
yeah.
know? And it won't be until someone realizes that, hey, we're getting squeezed out of market share to a level that we're feeling the pinch, that we've got to pivot off and adjust. And when that happens, you might see something like that. But I guess it hadn't happened yet.
Yeah. Okay. The real
Maybe
circus.
It doesn't happen. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a fascinating business strategy to all of this that, you know, I would argue with somebody, hey, don't worry, the market's going to fix this thing. It hasn't yet. I mean, it hasn't changed the dynamic of the industry at all. I mean, the industry's still going the same way, and it goes further down that path. The real circus, though, you were there not long ago, right there. They are the gift that keeps giving, man. They are a daily Springer show. I'm going to miss him. You know, if he ends up in a jumpsuit, I'm going to miss him. The Trump family circus is, let's start here. A somewhat serious question about the law, because I think people's attitude is the more Trump talks and his kids talk and they make noise, the average person kind of goes, yeah, nothing's going to happen. Nothing ever happens to this guy. Yeah, you know, it's the same old thing. And I tell you, it's true, nothing ever happens to this guy legally, and he and his family muck it up enough publicly that I think you just sort of tune out sooner or later. So, big picture question, is there this time, this is what somebody would say to you, oh, come on, buddy, this time, is he really in trouble?
This time.
This time. I mean, like, this time, is it for real?
So you're talking about the Mar-a-Lago search and the classified documents.
Classified, because his defense, right. his defense, before we even get into the defense started at, I don't have that stuff. I don't have any, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have any of that stuff. Oh, that stuff. If you'd asked, I would have given it back to you. Then it goes, I got that stuff. F off. Then it goes, like in the last 48 hours, it's gone to, well, yeah, I have that stuff, but I'm going to use it in my library, which is an online library. That's the way his public defense is gone. And in...
Well, somewhere in there, yeah, go ahead.
Well, in the midterm, his son is also screaming, they're out to get him again. So we all know the public narrative. That's why I know the average person over a glass of wine or a cup of coffee would say, come on, counselor, this time is he really in trouble?
Right. So we didn't mention this last time we spoke. I didn't even anticipate this defense. The initial defense raised in federal court in front of the magistrate and like 2 weeks ago was that he had declassified them, that he could just sort of sua sponte himself declassify them. And of course you can't do that. There's all kinds of rules and regulations on how you declassify documents, and it takes a long time because any entity that has some say in that document would have a chance to report back. And there's, you know, it's all done in secret and camera. And then you follow all these procedures to declassify things. It takes a long time. So it takes a long time to classify something, right? So obviously it takes a long time to declassify it. So that was one of the arguments he made at the beginning too, was like, well, hold on. As the president, I just kind of waved a magic wand and I said, no, those aren't classified.
Right. As usual, it was BS. It was just
right,
BS.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Weird argument. So I do think that this case has serious consequences for him. And I think it's just because of all the stuff we're learning now. So since we last spoke, you know, even within the last 48 hours, it seems like every 24 hours we learned something pretty substantial. So what we learned is that in April, the FBI gave notice. Well, actually, the National Archives director gave notice that the FBI was coming over to inspect the documents he had already turned over. And that, again, they needed their cooperation. They needed somebody from his legal team to be there. And they kept stonewalling them, saying, you don't have permission to do that. It's executive privilege, which doesn't apply because he's, you know, this is different and he's no longer in office. But that's significant because we learned that he did turn over quite a bit of information. And it goes against the narrative that he had no notice and that the raid on Mar-a-Lago was just this surprise government bully attempt. And, you know, and here you have this literally almost like a librarian from the National Archives. I forgot her name, but I mean, she's literally emailing Trump and his legal team like, hey, I'm the National Archives lady. I'm like the librarian, man. Like, you got to come down here, dude. You weren't supposed to take those things. I mean, it's just crazy.
It really is like the old days when you would get those notices. You got to return your book.
It's the Seinfeld library cop.
Yeah, exactly.
Down after 12 years.
Please return your books. Come on. Return that Clifford book.
Look here, Seinfeld. So then we learned in those documents that Trump had turned over, there were 700 pages of documents, and like 100 were separated as classified, and many in there, not just a few, were deemed to be extraordinarily sensitive, which is like the highest term of art for classified information. The type of stuff that secret operations, that divulges military secrets that very few know. I mean, this stuff is like super classified, if that's even a word.
Well, the basic fundamental, forget Tom Clancy novels and the law.
Yeah.
Any thinking person, if we were just to chat about this at a bar, you'd say, why does that guy even need that stuff? It doesn't add up. You don't.
No. And so he returns those documents and he won't cooperate. His legal team is stonewalling, and they have all this documentation that's all in court filings now over the last couple of days. Just talking about the multiple attempts they gave Trump's legal team and Trump himself to work with them to get the documents back, to organize them, to figure out what was taken. And then I guess if he had done that properly, I don't think we're here at this point. Really don't. I think it's an issue that they're still concerned about what he still may have, where it may be. And it's also just an issue at some point where you keep thumbing your nose at this information. It's so classified. What's the point of having it be classified if no one's ever going to follow those rules, right? So that's the argument. So then we learned when they did the raid, that there was all kinds of extraordinarily sensitive information there, that it's just the same. It's highly classified. So if you look at the inventory list that was released after the FBI did their raid, we learned that there were extraordinarily sensitive classified documents in his bedroom, in the first floor storage room. So where else was there? Were three separate places. They found him in his bedroom, his home office there in Mar-a-Lago, and his first floor storage room. So the argument, you know, when you saw his new lawyer come on the news yesterday or whenever it was this morning and argue, well, we put an extra padlock on the storage room, as if somehow that gives a private citizen the right to take highly classified military documents out in the open to their home office. It doesn't, by the way. That's a crime. But it's not accurate. It's not factually accurate.
Right. So he's the entire
out
time.
In his bedroom and,
let me stop there before we get to the Tom Clancy stuff, because I think right. Again, average people are thinking, okay, is it just that he's such, again, to me, the Trump defense can always end up with, he's just a goofy buffoon. Right. Okay. I mean, I'm leaving stuff around. I don't know. They're by my golf clubs. Well, come on. You guys are all buttoned up. You're always worried about this stuff. It's no big deal. Has he been lying? I mean, is the government building a case that all this time he keeps lying to them about what he has and doesn't have and where it is? Is that going to be a crime by itself, lying to the feds?
Well, yes. So I don't know directly if he has met with the feds to lie to them. So he would have to be the person to meet with them. Now, we know he did show up at the Mar-a-Lago meeting they had. So keep in mind, after he returns all these documents, he meets with federal agents in Mar-a-Lago and shows them the storage room where he had documents still. And that's when they looked around and they were like, all right, you've been lying to us before. You have been reluctant to turn over these documents. You won't participate in the National Archives inspecting the documents that you did turn over, so we can figure out, you know, how you got them, where you took them, what you were doing, which is fine. If he thought he was going to be charged with a crime, I wouldn't go down there and willingly meet with anybody, but I might send my lawyer.
Now, he's watching on video as they're searching his place. Was that done intentionally for him and for the feds? I mean, did everybody want to be on the same page? Or was he just hanging out at the club, like watching on closed circuit?
You mean during the raid
yeah,
itself?
Yeah, the raid.
The time they visited?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I don't, the FBI, would, by the time they marshaled together the resources to effectuate a raid and do all the safety checks they got to do, and it's a huge undertaking, and when they do that, they usually don't, you know, tip somebody off that they're coming. Obviously, that's not the point of a raid. So,
So
it's highly unlikely they would have coordinated that and said, hey, now that we're here, if you want to go watch, we'll let you watch. I mean, now it's possible that he had lawyers show up right away and they work something out. And that, I mean, I've shown up at businesses where my clients got raided and it was all, you know, it wasn't anything too crazy. But I mean, agents usually will work with you and they'll be, you know, I've done that quite a few times. But in this case, I don't believe that's what happened.
Okay.
I'm not sure. But so anyway, when they had that meeting with him after the April opportunities expired, after like five or six opportunities over the course of April, and this is all laid out in court filings, then when they show up and meet with him and his attorney, that's when they see that documents are not where they're supposed to be. And then he still has documents. He's admitting that he still has classified documents there. And so then they're locked and they're thinking to themselves, what the hell are these? Like, what do you have? Why do you still have them? It doesn't even make sense. So then they give them many more opportunities, apparently. And that's what they're laying out. That's what they're swearing to under oath in court. So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But I think there's plenty of email correspondence and documentation the government will be able to provide to show that we've given you an exhaustive number of opportunities that the actual private normal citizen would not get, that you've been afforded, and you still didn't follow through with it, and you still broke the law.
Okay.
So there's no question you broke the law.
Yeah.
Not for debate.
Okay.
Debate
that's what people want to check off now, because they always hear the noise of Trump. Once you stop laughing, then you think it's just noise again. So if the whole thing stops now, and let's nothing more sinister. That's where my mind is going. Something, you know, the dude's selling him is kind of what I'm thinking. But let's just say it ends right now, and it ends at the librarian called, you didn't return your stuff. She kept calling, you didn't return your stuff. The feds say, please return your stuff. You lied to them. You had the stuff. by the letter of the law, has he broken the law as of now? And what comes of that? Wherever you are on the hot sauce scale, ATX Hot Sauce has something for you. ATX Hot Sauce even took home 2 gold medals at the prestigious Austin Chronicle Hot Sauce Awards. This is a 32-year-old event that brings out the best in the hot sauce world. And it was the first time ATX Hot Sauce even entered. It's a cool name, cool logo, and very cool slogan. Flavor first, heat second, and local all the way. Go to atxhotsauce.com. It's that simple. That's atxhotsauce.com.
Well, I mean, it is. It's a clear violation of the law to take extraordinarily classified, highly classified, and even just classified, and then there's privilege. There's like multiple layers. And he had a little bit of everything, apparently. A lot of it, not just a little. Like hundreds and hundreds of different classified documents, but some more than just a few of extraordinarily classified information. So that in and of itself is a crime. Like that was, I mean, when he sent those back, that's kind of a way of, it's basically like a not a tacit admission, it's an outward admission that he committed a crime and took him. Now, what he'll say is, hey, you know, it was a little crazy when I left in January, wasn't the smoothest transfer.
Exactly. Course, it's a decent defense. You know, I mean, you know, there's a riot going on around.
Might have unclean hands on the argument that he didn't have something to do with how you know, crazy that move
was. I mean, when
was,
he says,
right?
Come on, guys, it's chaos. Did you see that place? Yeah, it was on fire. I just had to get out of there. I didn't know these things were in the back of the Suburban, some of my golf clubs. Come on.
Right. So, you know, it may be that once he returned that stuff in April, but no, these conversations and discourse was going on well over a year ago. It's just that we've been a little focused on this April meeting because that's when the FBI had given him dates of like, we will be at this place at this time. We're tired of trying to negotiate a time and place with you. This is the time we've chosen. Now you need to come down here. And he kept trying to postpone that and blow that off. That's why we're kind of focused because this is new information that came out in the last 48 hours. But there were many opportunities before that. But I think what you're asking is like, would he have been charged with a crime back then? I don't think so. I think if he had returned everything and just said, yeah, that was really stupid, or didn't even have to say anything, just returned everything. And then they said, well, look, we're not sure. We want to come inspect your place. And then he just gave him an open view of everything and just said, look, there's nothing here. I don't think we're looking at anything like this. I think it's the fact that he still continues. We're still not sure if he has other extraordinarily classified information, and we're still not sure why he had them, and it's a crime to have them.
Okay.
So,
and what would be the, what would be, although his lunatic son the other night said, well, if he has the nuclear codes, that'd be a great thing. I thought, oh no.
Yeah, that's probably not the smartest thing to say.
Yeah.
Right?
So, but what is... What is he? There's an entire presidential race dependent upon what kind of trouble this guy gets into, if any. If it's, is it going to be, you shouldn't have done that, you lied to the feds, pay $1 million and go about your way? Or is there, as of right now, would there be more to it?
Well, here's what I find fascinating, and I'm going to answer your question, try not to do the roundabout way here, but if you're Merrick Garland, you have some tough decisions to make, right? And what's interesting is Trump's playbook, and it has worked quite well, seems to be to just be just take the narrative immediately, open it all up, disseminate it out in the public, and then say, "Hey, I'm an open book. They're out to get me. It's the swamp, the
right.
You know, blunt force of the government coming after me." Hey, I mean, as a criminal defense lawyer, make those arguments quite a bit. I get it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with making that argument. But I think in this case, it's going to potentially backfire, and here's why, here's how. So if you're Merrick Garland, you don't really have sort of the public sentiment yet, I don't think, to charge him and not have it be a massive backlash. I mean, we had the Cincinnati FBI office raided. We talked about that, you know, recently. So the more Trump sort of comes out in the open and attacks them, the more they calmly, it seems, just share openly, the more we see like this memo that got released that Barr had written right before, which we can talk about that some other time. But I mean, the more he forces the government to share what they have and show their cards, in this case, it seems like there's so much evidence that this is a very clear violation. It's a very clear statute. Like, you can't take certain things with you when you're not inside. It'd be like taking stuff from work and they find it at your house. Like, It's almost a strict liability crime. Like you can't.
Yeah, but Stephen, I mean, it's you take the petty cash and fax machine. Do we still have fax machines? All right, maybe lawyers have fax machines.
The 8-track player, Betamax.
You take the coffee maker and some petty cash. It's a little bit different than nuclear codes.
No, I get it. Yeah. No, so more to your point, right? Yeah. So it's even a bigger deal. But my point is, it's a very simple statute to prove, right? So these are tough decisions that the Attorney General has to have. But the more the Trump legal team seems to force the government to share what they have, it's changing, I think, the narrative, because you're learning how many opportunities they were given. And it just directly cuts into their legal argument that this is unfair. They caught us by surprise. They're trying to do this before the midterms. Like, are you kidding me, man? We've been talking to you for like 18 months, 12 months, whatever, you know, all those kinds of things. So I think that's why this one's a little different. I think if I were him, it doesn't seem like he ever does this, but I'm sure his attorneys have advised, like, just be quiet, let this blow over. Like, the bigger argument that would win the day to me is like, this is like a small thing. Like, we've rectified it.
Yeah.
It was, you know, whatever. It's no harm's done now. All right. Problem's over. Government's happy. Everyone's got what they need. And that's it. And then have your client say nothing. But the more they keep antagonizing the government and with this argument that we barely got notice, we were trying to work it out with them, but they're such bullies, they just tore down our Mar-a-Lago for the optics of it. The more we're learning that is not what happened at all. And it's not my opinion, right? That's just what the facts are bearing out. I think that's a problem for him. And so I think it gives the Attorney General some comfort that at some point the public will start saying, hey, man, this is not fair. He's getting special treatment.
Right.
Like a celebrity or something.
He is.
You got to enforce the law. This is BS. And he is, right? Yeah. He is. I mean, I represent tons of clients who get charged with obstruction of justice over the smallest petty things, like a phone call to a potential witness just telling him that the address and the time to show up at a hearing with nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's an easy statute to prove. So.
I've been wanting to play this just because it has multiple levels. I would first say to you, man, I hope you're better than or would do a better job in a TV appearance if you were representing someone than his lawyer. I don't know if it was Tuesday of this week. His attorney goes on Fox News, friendly environment. You get to do your thing and say the usual stuff. And when you swing and miss on Fox News, I don't think you've really helped your client at all. This is his attorney on, I believe it's Tuesday night, trying to save his butt.
Sorry to interrupt, but was there a limited number of people who had access to that storage room? It seems like a pretty important room, right, since they've made such a big deal of it and have the lock on it and so forth. So were there a limited number of people who could go in and out?
Yes, absolutely.
Or have access to it?
Certainly Mar-a-Lago certainly Mar-a-Lago is secure in and of itself. You know, just getting onto the compound is hard. And then it was a locked door and getting, you know, back down into the basement, there's security. You can't just walk down there. Only certain members of staff can get there. And then there's only one key. So, yes, it's a very limited number of people that have access down there. And, you know, it was enough to where President Trump believed, or our team believed, that it was secure enough. They asked for one more lock at another lock, which we did. And then for whatever reason, they decided that they still needed to raid the place.
And only one or two people had access to that room, to your knowledge?
That's my understanding. I mean, I would have to check with, you know, the maintenance of that area. But my understanding is it is a very small number of people that could get in there.
All right, counselor.
Oh, boy.
Before I even talk about apparently how you get hired by Donald Trump may not have to do with your education and legal expertise. It might have something to do with something else.
I want no part of that comment,
I understand.
I'll step away from that.
All right, that's fine. I'll do it. It seems that he hires people that look a certain way. Either way, that doesn't sound like that helped much at all.
I think it hurt tremendously. Again, you don't have the right to take highly classified documents off-site. So it doesn't matter whether you have an extra... I mean, to me... If I'm Master Lock, this is my new Super Bowl commercial I do once
exactly,
a year.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Like, we're trusted with the most important documents.
There you go. Master Nuclear Lock. Codes at a
yes,
country club.
Right. I'm thinking of the advertising and marketing brain.
It's good for you.
You just admitted that you knew there were privileged documents, so much so that you took some actions of your own to, like, you talk to the staff that work there in this private club and that only a few people go there, and as if that makes it okay. You're just admitting that you had the scienter, the knowledge that the documents contained in your private facility are ones that you're not supposed to have, and that you're taking extraordinary action to try and protect. The whole thing is just sort of admitting things you don't want to admit to.
How about the comments is my favorite, other than the spray tan, of course. But
no comment.
Yeah. Maybe that's what you got to do, man. You got
to
just.
Well, there's a lot of things I need to do.
Okay, okay. Well,
but my spray tan's up there.
My favorite part of that is, I checked with the maintenance team. Like,
yeah.
Wait,
the
what?
Private country club security guard. I checked with him, and so our nuclear codes are safe. We're fine. I checked with him. It's, you know, it's mall cop. I checked with Paul, you know, Bart or whatever his name is. You know, the mall cop, and we're fine. We're fine. He's on a Segway, and he rotates around the grounds with a Segway, checking it, and we're good. We're fine here. Those are really, it just shows how they don't take this seriously. If I'm a federal prosecutor, when you make comments like that on behalf of your client, and I don't want to personally attack her. I don't know her. I think that's a bad look optically, right? Because what you're doing there is you're basically saying, like, it's no big deal. Y'all are overreacting, which is his favorite argument to make, right? But in this case, there's a lot of high level, probably mostly Republican national security experts who are deeply, gravely concerned at the fact that this stuff's floating around, and that like security guards and private club people can, like, smoke a cigar, have some brandy, go down to his office and maybe check out some security documents, and he can brag about it. I mean, that's what I would be arguing.
Yeah.
And so
it's a problem. But to your point about the Department of Justice, you're not just prosecuting Stephen Toland's clients. You're prosecuting a former president who wants to be president again, who carries the pulse of 35% of America, who will absolutely raise hell if you don't have something more than a few documents here or there, some nerdy thing about North Korea satellites. Do you not, I mean, and this is where I'm going to go Tom Clancy. Doesn't there need to be more than this? I'm not saying to the average person, yes, of course, the rest of us get prosecuted. But it feels like there's going to need to be another shoe to drop, as if to say he didn't just take the documents and he knew he shouldn't take them, and then he lied about it, but he was going to do something with those. Is that where this, I know I'm looking far ahead, I know I'm going Tom Clancy, but I feel like for this to work publicly, the average meathead who's a Trumpie who's saying leave him alone needs to hear, oof. Uh-oh. He was going to do that? Right?
That's a great question. It's a great question because it raises you're bringing up, like, legally, factually what you need to do versus how to change the public narrative or public perception, which charging decisions often come down to a little bit of that, right? Because your job as a prosecutor is to factor in to the public and what's good for the public and how will the public respond to it and things like that. So if I'm prosecuting in this case, I'm not sure I want, unless I have a smoking gun like that, I'm not sure I want to go there because the statute doesn't require me to go there.
Okay.
And then I'm inadvertently creating an extra burden for myself that I wouldn't normally need. And then the other side's attorneys would pounce on that. So unless it's there and you find it, I don't think I'm going to add anything like that. I don't even think I say, what could he have done with this? Or I think I would say, like, look, the reason we have these rules is because anyone could find them. And
right,
it's
right. Okay. So the maintenance guy.
You could also argue it's dangerous for Trump to have them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's dangerous for his family. Like, here's another argument. We're spending tons of money on security to protect him as a former president. Like, you telling me spies from other countries and they find out there aren't secret, highly classified, extraordinarily classified information in his country club bedroom and house. They're not going to send top secret agents to come down there and kill people and get those documents.
Okay.
Like, it's an unsafe situation.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not a stretch. That's Tom Clancy too, right? So I think if you have that, you're going to certainly say that. because it would hopefully shift away the narrative that this man can do no wrong, and that would be important if you want to heal the country a little bit. But he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to show that. So I don't know if some people may never change their opinion about whether he did anything wrong here.
No, I think they won't. I mean, that's why I'm well. First of all, my big picture argument is, the way I look at this is, if it had been so, I can almost buy into Trump the buffoon argument. Like I almost think at some level he's too much of a goofball to be able to do anything really sinister. But if it had been someone else, I don't know, just my opinion, I don't know how you could arrive at a conclusion other than you were going to do something. You were going to bribe somebody. You were going to sell it. Something. You knew better. Well, that's what you would apply to the normal person, not a buffoon like Trump. A normal person, you'd say, that's an organized crime person who's going to do something terrible with this. I don't know about him. I could see arguments saying, he doesn't know. He doesn't care.
It's leverage. It's leverage at a very minimum. But the easiest argument to make if you're a government prosecutor is that this man and his team don't do, like any sophisticated person at his level, they don't make decisions or do anything without it having, there's leverage. They're always looking for leverage. And so at the very minimum, if he's running for office again, which we know he is, and he's announced it, though, I mean, he hasn't announced it, but I mean, way before we found out about these classified documents issues, he's made aspersions to running for office and those kinds of things. And so at the very minimum, I guess you would argue that it's leverage for when he runs somehow, that he knows more than other people or to get threatened. I don't know. But it's a very interesting angle. It's a very easy argument to make, I think.
Yeah.
But I just want to be clear, the prosecution doesn't have to make that argument to make this case. It doesn't require it. And so, the accidental, it's unclear whether it's sort of a strict liability statute. There is some intent requirement. But that's the problem with all the notice he's given. The buffoon argument is a little weak here. Because, I mean, obviously we know it's weak, we're joking around about it, but it certainly works in the court of public opinion, right?
Sure.
It's worked massively.
Yeah.
But I think in this case, the criminal case, if there is one, it's a weak argument because of all the notices that have been given and all the opportunities afforded to him that he was, once you're put on notice of that, the buffoon argument doesn't really work anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
So
it's kind of like, once I know that I'm an idiot, my golf clubs are stored with other stuff, you know, because I can relate to that messy car and messy, you know, garage with my golf clubs next to something important. Once you're aware of that, though, like you got to, you know, that argument's over, right?
Right. If you, there's a story out now, which is just so perfect for the life of Trump. Have you seen some report came out of the list of people that showed up, have been there? Vanilla Ice was my Vanilla Ice was my favorite. I thought Vanilla Ice is,
of course.
He's got the nuclear codes.
Well, that's the problem with it. It's an easy, I mean, in the court of public opinion, and then the jury pool that you would get in Washington, as we saw with Bannon's trial and some of these other January 6th insurrectionists or those charged in January 6th crimes, you'll see the jury pool is a lot of government workers, a lot of people who have to live with these rules.
Yeah.
A lot of people whose life is pretty difficult and challenging because of all the extraordinary precautions they got to follow for all these. So, I mean, those are easy people to find and put on your jury. And they're going to be like, dude, why do you get a free pass when I don't? You know, you got people like Vanilla Ice coming down there. You got all these celebrities coming down to look at these documents. I can't even talk to my husband or wife about these things. I can't even share part of my life and my job with my family. And you get to have all these celebrities run through there like, you know, Bob Hope Charity Classic or something. Give me a break.
Wow,
man.
Bob Hope.
So
I
was going to go Sun Valley. Ski thing.
Okay, so he's going to be indicted.
I feel like he will be. Yeah. I feel like...
When does that? When
I feel like he's kind of forcing the government to indict him.
He really is. His genius lawyer with a spray tan, the perfect teeth, and the beautiful hair, and a great dress didn't help matters.
All right, I'm calling Palm Beach after this, man. You motivated me. I'm
saying, apparently.
Right, next time you see me,
it's going to be a different look. I know. You're going to be orange.
Yeah. Speaking of Vanilla Ice, you see me again.
So
it's gonna be great.
If he were indicted, it would be when? And then what happens when? And when matters for the rest of us.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a whole separate conversation, right? It depends on, you know, if they indict him, then, I mean, I don't know when. I don't know what else they're looking for. I think they're still trying to figure out all they've got. I think they're still going through documents and still I mean, I'm sure they're going through all these documents right now, and they're probably trying to connect some other dots, like you said. Like, how did you get these documents? Like, when did you take them?
Right.
And what
Which
meeting?
Is amazing.
What meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm him and his son's hanging around the club, I gotta believe they're thinking, well, let's run, let's win. You got old Joe, you can beat him. And as long as you win, this stuff's going to go away.
Maybe. You know what would be interesting to see is if they ever tried to seize the club itself. If they found enough privileged documents and connect some other things to it, could they file forfeitures and try and get the club itself just to add insult to injury? I mean, happens all the time. You got a small amount of drugs in your car, and then they try and seize your $60,000 Suburban because they're saying you're running your criminal enterprise. You're using your vehicle to further your criminal enterprise. So, I mean, certainly he's using, the more they talk about, we talk to the security guards and they help us keep the stuff secure and we bought an extra padlock. And, you know, Mar-a-Lago is all aware of everything. We're doing our best to keep everything safe. Yay.
Yeah, we're all one team.
You know,
for
what
the
you're
club
doing
here.
Is you're using Mar-a-Lago to help you continue this crime. And so this is, if I'm a federal prosecutor, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go after freaking Mar-a-Lago, man.
Wow. Put a padlock on the golf course, you're going to have hell to pay.
I'd be a little miffed if I were a member.
And also, I might suggest this, that I believe it is a who's who of American billionaires there. Bob Kraft, I think, is a member there. So,
yeah.
Oof. You don't go there lightly.
Well,
you take away their golf, their underage girlfriends and shuffleboard, and you're in another fight there, my man.
No one wants to fight Robert Kraft.
Nope. We've seen what Bob gets out of. So
But Bobby keeps his mouth shut.
He does.
Bobby doesn't talk. So
yeah, you're right.
That's a lesson learned there.
But is there a way, time wise, and sort of the letter of the law, how someone would be indicted? You know how that thing plays out. Is there a way to get to inauguration? Do you have to get to inauguration day or certifying of the vote? Which one would you have to get to be in a place to say, I'm pardoning myself? Inauguration day?
Oh, I see what you mean. If he were to be convicted and then he, but see, he can't run for office if he's convicted.
Right, right. So, what I'm saying is I got to believe he and his sons are sitting around thinking, you get elected, you're home free.
Right. I just don't think the timeline is, I mean, this at some point, the government will be aware too of timelines and we'll seek to file charges. And once charges are filed, I think, I mean, they're just charges. You're innocent unless you're proven guilty, not until you're proven guilty. And it's, you know, I'm a criminal defense lawyer by trade, so I take that very seriously. But I don't think there's enough time there for him to, we've got midterms coming up. We've got a whole nother, you know, election cycle after that. So it would be hard. These cases, the speedy trial clock in federal court is approximately 75 days. Generally, there's a continuance or two granted for different reasons, but this is not a complicated case. If I'm a federal judge, I'm like, you don't need more time. If you took the documents without permission, you took the documents without permission. You know, did you not know they were privileged? What's your story here? You know, I mean, there's not a lot to it. It's a very
he obviously
case.
Can run when he's indicted. Because I find it hard to believe that is not part of the thinking on each side. In other words, if we're going to have a case,
oh,
it
I'm
better
sure
be clear because he's going to run and he is like on a mad dash. He's not running because he wants to help the country or taxes or something like that. He's running because he wants to get his butt out of this, correct?
Right. I can't speculate everything that guy does. But yeah, I mean, I would think if you're now, from what I read and hear and glean from filings, his lawyers very much, and there's internal emails that have been shared a little bit, but where several lawyers were saying, you know, our biggest problem is quote unquote Mar-a-Lago. Mar-a-Lago is a huge problem. We need to pay attention to Mar-a-Lago. There's some things that have come out about that. So I think his, whatever lawyer that was, like lawyer 29 of whatever lawyer he's on now or whatever it is, right? They were concerned about that. So I think they're all aware of that. And so the timeline, though, this case is not going to drag out 2 years. It's going to drag out a year and a half. If he's filed and charged, it's maybe 6 months, something like that. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, these things move. They can. I mean, there's not a lot to it. I mean, if I'm the government, I'm pushing for speed. I mean, I'm pushing to have this heard as quick as possible. And he could try and slow it down. But generally, speedy trial clock runs, and it's to the benefit, it inures to the benefit of the defendant. It's supposed to protect the defendant. So it's hard as a defendant to go back and say, hey, I want to slow it down. You know, judges are like, what? So you've got to explain what it is you're looking for, what you need. You've got to justify it.
Okay.
And then there are some classifications in federal court called complex case designations. Those are like your RICO cases, antitrust cases. I work on those. This is not that kind of case. This is a very straightforward, simple statute, very simple case. So it's not going to get a complex case designation. It's going to move quick once if it is filed and he is indicted. It will move fairly quickly.
Okay. Now what we've learned is everyone has to watch and see if there's going to be some locks on Mar-a-Lago on the golf course. And then next time we see you, I know this now. I mean, all you get is on this podcast. She's on Fox News in prime time. You now know. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying that, it's the spray tan issue, and I'm going to take care of that. I'm going to rectify that.
All right, as always, good stuff. Good talking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Get the Jeff Ward Show podcast on the Apple or Spotify podcast platform or wherever you're listening right now.